welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 and the General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we shine a spotlight on topics important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. Well, I'm very excited this morning. We've got a special guest on, and I'm joined by Mike Braun, and this is going to be a series of interviews with different U.S. Senate candidates. And Mike's a friend and a local gentleman, and I'm really excited that we're able to interview him. He's a busy guy. And Mike, welcome to the station.
Thank you.
Well, I want to start us off by talking a little bit about your background. I know who you are, and I know you're where you're from, but I'd like you to inform our listenership and tell us who you are and how you got into this.
Well, I've actually been the state rep covering Davies, Martin, Pike, and DuBois counties up until November of last year. I resigned a seat. Wonderful experience. Most of my time has been spent in the private sector. My wife and I moved back in 78 after going to business school and lived away for a couple years. And big decision back then to come back to your hometown. Never
sure.
Regretted it.
Yeah.
In that time, I was at a really small company for nearly 17 years and in Hayesville, Indiana. I moved into Jasper in 98, and then it really took off. So in the last 20 years, it's grown from a small enterprise to one that does business across the country with locations in 35 states and 65 locations across the entire lower 48. Been blessed.
Absolutely.
Three of my four kids work in the business and kind of gave me time to, you know, do something like this or think about it. I was on our school board for 10 years prior to becoming a state rep.
Sure.
When the opportunity came along to look at a federal race, I decided to take it on.
And why was that? I mean, why was now the time you were, and I'm not saying this to say anything, but to say you were 3 years into this, I mean, you ran twice, correct?
Correct.
So you were 3 years into that state rep term. Why was now the time?
One thing is it got something accomplished that from the day I got there, I wanted to make sure that here in Southern Indiana, we had the ability to get more infrastructure dollars spent on the sad situation of our roads generally across the South. And we not only did that with a road funding bill that I think is going to put that on track to be something we're going to see the real results of from here for a long time. Also got a bill passed along with Senator Messmer that is called a regional infrastructure bill. And the project that's been most important to DuBois County, Davies, Martin, anybody where we don't have great connection
right
between places, this bill would be the structure to get 64 connected to 69.
And is that the I-67 discussion, that project?
Mid-State Corridor or I-67,
okay.
Both names given to it. And that is really now moving. And for DuBois County, it also addresses the bypass issue, which I know I've been hearing
sure.
that since I was a teenager.
Sure.
So,
well, it's an important project, especially for this part of the state. And I'll say, I mean, I was impressed, I guess, and surprised by the types of committees that you got to participate on right when you started there. And tell us a little bit about the coverage area. Where did you represent again?
The north half of DuBois County.
Sure.
Good part of Davies County. Pike County, basically Otwell and Jefferson Township.
Okay.
A little bit of Petersburg.
Sure.
And then Martin County, Shoals, Ligoti, and South.
Okay. So you represented big parts of Davies County and a big area in south central, southwestern Indiana, right?
Correct.
Okay. And at this point, you've stepped away from that state position and you're running for a federal position. I want you to tell us a little bit about the process so far in running for U.S. Senate. I mean, it can't be fun. I mean, is it fun?
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I get up early and go to bed late, and I've added an hour in each direction. So
wow.
The reason I had to resign the seat is to do this correctly. It's a full-time job. And the process is you got to have a good message that you're taking to the voter marketplace. You've got to be able to articulate it. And you've got to have a good team that's going to, you know, this is so much more comprehensive than running for state rep, although the mechanics are similar. It's just broader.
Basically the same thing.
Same kind of things you're doing. You won't use yard signs and go door to door because you can't do that across the state.
You got to have a message that resonates, and you got to turn your voters out, right?
Exactly. So that's done. You're putting a larger organization together to do it, and that comes in handy to have a business background, because a lot of similarities in terms of scaling a business would be
similar
to scaling a campaign from
Absolutely.
A state one to a national or a federal one.
And you've been pretty gracious about how you've described your business. I mean, I know the way I understood it, it was quite small, and it's really taken off. You went from a small enterprise. I think you said you purchased it at some point, and then you've just grown it from there.
We basically had 15 employees for about 17 years. And in the late 90s, when I knew I had a tiger by the tail, the decision was, how do you grow it from there? Well, thing called competitors. Others were thinking the same thing. And over that stretch of time, between the late 90s and through the Great Recession, a lot of companies my size were vying for more regional space. And through the mid-2000s to 2009, there were six of us, along with two private equity and Wall Street companies.
Okay.
And I was the only regional distributor left standing.
Wow.
The one big Wall Street company either put out of business or bought my other competitors, nearly filed bankruptcy in the process. So we wake up in 2009, phones ringing off the hook.
Last man standing, right?
Kind of that. So it was a surprise, and the decision was, do you kind of sit back and enjoy what was going to be probably some prosperity if you decided not to grow? We decided to grow because that opportunity doesn't come along that often.
Right.
And that's when we grew from 300 employees to 850 that we have now.
Wow. So you've been successful, obviously, in the private sector. And generally, though, it seems like relatively few people want to put their name on the ballot, especially in a statewide thing like this. What happened that made you think, all right, I'm going to do this? I assume your window is small when you choose to do something like this. You don't want to run every 2 years or every four
years.
Well,
first of all, depending on what you're wanting to run for, a couple issues. Is there an incumbent in your party there? So you're at the mercy of
right.
when they decide to vacate the seat. In this case, it's an open seat,
right.
which rarely comes along.
And to be fair, it's not open. It's just occupied by a Democrat, right?
Oh, open on the Republican side.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
So that just doesn't happen. And then you got to put in your own personal time frame. I'm at a point where I feel great. Business is in good shape.
Sure.
Three of my four kids are there running it with a good executive team. So you don't get a pick and choose. It
right.
comes along very seldom.
So now's the time. You got to make
now's
it happen
the time.
If
you
you're
going
to do it. I want to talk a little bit about the election process thus far, and I know you've been crisscrossing the state, you've been all over the place. Tell us, what's a favorite experience that you've had so far, and what have you enjoyed about the process?
Well, in growing my business, we've got somewhere between 200 and 300 customers in the state of Indiana. So I knew the geography pretty well, at least virtually, because I've been all over the map, not necessarily there. When you actually start getting around and traveling a lot of times by yourself into the nooks and crannies of the Northeast,
sure,
even the Southeast part of the state, you see a lot of places and meet a lot of people that probably never would have done otherwise. So
right.
the fringe benefit of doing this is, if you have the right attitude, it's like you're on vacation every day
sure.
when you're out on the road, even
sure.
though you know you got a different purpose in mind.
Sure. And I know it's a lot of work, but and I've worked on some campaigns and helped out, and it is fun, the people that you get to meet.
It really is.
And that you otherwise would have no bases or no reason to run into them. Tell me, this particular role, U.S. Senator, why is that important to you? And why should it be important to people in Southern Indiana?
Well, I think, let's say, as opposed to a U.S. rep.
Sure.
First of all, the term is every 2 years versus every 6 years.
Six.
At my stage of the game, that's probably something I would have looked at a different time earlier. Things didn't work out again. That window only opens either way now and then. But when you're a U.S. senator, I mean, you're one of 100 individuals that are going to basically carry the day on whatever we're wanting to do legislatively in this country. And too often I see the same kind of people getting there, which are folks that have been in the business of politics as a livelihood.
Lawyers and politicians, right?
Well, I know you're a lawyer, so I'm not going to throw everybody into the same heap there.
But I understand.
Typically, you know, that is a prototype.
Right.
And I think the more that we can get people in D.C. as reps, especially senators, that have lived their conservatism in the trenches and not as a politician. If there's one thing that's going to differentiate me from my competitors, we all went to Wabash College. They're about 10 years younger than I am, but from the moment...
That's kind of amazing, though, right? That the Wabash College
that
connection
is interesting.
It's pretty amazing. And obviously, they're younger than you, but they have been politicians, is that right?
They got their law degrees and never even really practiced and got into...
Which doesn't necessarily make them bad guys, but they do have law degrees.
But they didn't practice their trade.
Right.
They've been in an appointed or a related political job or an elected one, you know, as their career. And I think you've got to be accountable for that. And especially when you've been on the scene in D.C., what have we heard from them to actually move the needle or to change all the things that we know are wrong about D.C.? You hear it a lot now that they're trying to promote themselves to senator. I don't recall hearing much out of them up to that point.
Absolutely. And I think that's obviously a way that you distinguish yourself in this race. I mean, there's some similarities, but there's some pretty stark differences, I would say, too. And let's talk a little bit about this. What are your advantages in this race, and what are some disadvantages that you've got?
Well, the biggest reason nobody does this, and I don't think in Indiana Senate history on the political end that there's been a guy that's run a competitive race without coming through the farm system of politics.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do that, you've got disadvantages because my two opponents entered the race with a war chest, mostly from PACs, lobbyists out of D.C.,
sure,
some in Indiana, and political insiders that have supported them along their career politics, you know, trajectory.
And if I might, we are talking about your Republican Party primary opponents, Luke Messer, Todd Rokita, correct?
You bet. The two U.S. congressmen.
Sure.
There are a couple other folks from outside politics that are in it, but not sure they're going to put a competitive race together.
The top three candidates, just for our listenership, are probably going to be yourself, is that correct? Mike Braun, Todd Rokita, and Luke Messer. Those are the three in the Republican U.S. Senate primary.
And that will probably also get the ballot signatures that you need, which is 500 per congressional district minimum to get on the ballot. And that is not an easy task.
Absolutely. So we were talking about advantages and disadvantages, and you were talking about some, you know.
The biggest difference is it's expensive. So when you're doing this, and money is too much a part of politics, it's really gotten crazy. This race in the general election could be the most expensive Senate race in U.S. history, you know, a possibility. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Indiana 2018
because
Senate
that
primary.
Because it's pivotal, and every time they get more expensive.
And explain that. Why should people care about this? Why is this so pivotal, Mike?
Well, when it's pivotal because it's one of three states that are currently held by Democrats. If you're a conservative and you'd like to see a Republican in there, it's probably one of the three that has a chance to be converted back. So
And the other states being, so Indiana and what?
Missouri would be one, and then maybe South Dakota, I think. There's one other state.
Montana, but, maybe. Is it Montana?
Yeah.
North Dakota.
Is it North Dakota?
One of the others, yeah.
Missouri and Indiana are the two high-profile ones.
Makes sense. And you talked about this being perhaps the most expensive of all time.
In the general election. So let's get back to the primary, which is what we're in now.
Sure.
So the resources that you need to do this and do it competitively is between $4 and $6 million. And when I say that, most people almost fall off their chair, but because they have no idea what it costs. So the two guys that have been in it have raised nearly half of that amount just through their congressional campaign accounts and can dump the whole thing into their Senate race. Mm-hmm. Anybody that comes from the outside has to raise it the old-fashioned way, from people outside the donor class, people that just want to see things change. And believe me, there are a lot of them, but they're not used to writing contribution checks.
Sure.
So the money I've had to raise has been from other business people, other folks fed up with the way business has been in D.C., and you have to put your own skin in the game. So when you take in fundraising, it's tough, even if you're good at it.
Right.
And when you've got to have resources out of your own pocket, number one, number two, why nobody hardly ever does it.
Absolutely, and that makes sense. And I think in certain ways, you've been able to level the playing field, so to speak, because you've been successful in business and because you've got those connections. Is that right?
All of that's made a big difference. And of course, even if I had those two things lined up, I spent nearly 2.5 months from the 1st of May through good part of July traveling the state, calling up community leaders, legislators, business folks to make sure it wasn't going to be a fool's errand. And Trump did carry the state by, I think, 19 points. And that was a statement of dissatisfaction with business as usual. That same sentiment is largely out there. And then people start asking you the questions of, how are you going to fund it? Are you going to be able to put a team together? And I wouldn't have, first of all, even taken those steps unless I was confirmed from a lot of different people that there's still an appetite from that kind of pathway.
That makes sense. And we're going to talk a little bit about, you talked about some of your opponents, and I want you to take a little bit of time and respond to maybe the negatives that your opponents are throwing out there. I mean, how do you respond to these things, and what does that mean practically for your campaign?
First of all,
they say no path to victory. You know, Mike can't win. He's never been in politics, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's what they said 3 months ago, and one of their own polls just came up and showed one that stayed flat, the other one dropped precipitously, and I gained almost all of that ground that the other guy lost. So right there, that's our current indicator that things are going great beyond what we're picking up. They're going to say that because they'll say or probably do about anything
to get elected.
To get elected. And that's so typical of folks that are in the business.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate how this has kind of become. It turns into a mudslinging contest.
And that's been because early on they thought it was going to be a question, 50-50 odds between one of the two of them.
Right.
And I think when a guy came in, there was curiosity at first, and now they're feeling the full brunt of somebody that's going to put one heck of an effort together, is going to fund it, and's got a better message, and is going to be able to articulate it.
Absolutely.
So most of what's going to hit them will be over the next 3 months when they see that they're going to stand on the fact I've been a career politician. And when they go negative, like they did between themselves,
right,
that's generally because they don't have anything positive to say about their record. And I'm going to have a lot to say.
That's like reminds me of my mom. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all, right?
That makes sense.
So we're winding down here a little bit. I'm going to give you a couple of different names, just different things, and I want you to kind of shoot back at me the first couple words that come to your mind, if that's okay.
That'd be fine.
All right, here we go. President Donald Trump
broke the glass ceiling of establishment politics. He's got D.C. all shook up.
Okay. President Barack Obama.
A guy that I think was politically correct in his behavior, but gave us some of the worst policies that you could get, and we're unraveling a lot of them now through executive order and with legislation that I hope gets through beyond what has.
Good. How about this one? Senator Mitch McConnell.
Majority leader, of course.
Sure.
I think is part of the D.C. that people would say is the establishment. I think it's a tough job when you got a one-vote margin now and you had a two-vote margin.
Sure.
I think that's a difficult job, and I think we need more Republican senators there to where it wasn't such a tough job for him to to get votes when we need it. I think that whoever's been part of D.C., like my two opponents, like Mitch McConnell, like any other Democrat or Republican, you've got to take responsibility for your
for what's going on.
15 to 20% approval rating,
right,
which is a result of things not getting done in D.C. As a business guy, I'd be out of business if you perform like that.
Absolutely. I'm going to give you one more.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll give you a hint. This might be your future opponent. So Senator Joe Donnelly.
A guy that's disguised himself as being someone that relates to Hoosiers. I think Joe Donnelly is a nice guy. I think his policies line right up with Pelosi and Schumer. And if you look at his voting record, he has mostly been in line with them. And you can't take a few strategic votes, like voting for Judge Gorsuch and a few others, to think that you can fool the public.
Sure. Well, this is good stuff. I didn't give you this ahead of time, so you did a good job of responding to that. What I'd like to do here is kind of give you the closing argument why we should vote for Mike Braun. Maybe touch on what we're going to see if we get a Senator Mike Braun from Indiana.
Okay. At this stage of the game, I'm not going there for the perks. I'm definitely not building a career. I did sign the term limits pledge. My two opponents didn't even talk about that until they knew I signed it. Now they're saying things like I'm term limiting myself as a rep to run for Senate. I think that stuff sounds disingenuous. But when I go there, just like I did in the State House, I'm going to speak up and not sit back in the corner. If I see something that doesn't square with Hoosiers on the committees that I'm on, I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to be heard just like I was in the state legislature. The beautiful thing is I'm not going to be beholden to anyone. So when I go there, I'm not going to be calculating my vote based upon what PAC, what lobbyist, what political insider supported my campaign. And if there's anything that should resonate among the voters, that should be the thing that they take to heart. I'm not doing it to make a career out of it. I'm doing it to make a difference while I'm there.
Well, wonderful. Good closing argument for a non-lawyer. I'm impressed, Mike. Thank you. Thank you for coming in today, and we wish you the best on your campaign.
You're welcome.
Focus on the Community has been brought to you by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's program and past shows when you visit our website, WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:35 on Memories 107.9 and the General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the Community.